Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, as we said. All around the world, all around the country anyway. Today, I don't know if it's Mother's Day in other countries or not. But all around the country today, why, a special day of celebration. I was thinking, Christian mothers, you know? Christian mothers. What does that all invoke in our minds when we think of the term Christian mother? Many of those of us who are here today had mothers who were believers. Let's take a look at 2 Timothy 1. We're going to look at a number of scriptures today, a number of texts, but this will be the first one. 2 Timothy chapter 1, a familiar passage to many of us. And it kind of gives an anthology of what was going on in this one family, just in a brief aside, one verse, just in a brief aside to one of Paul's disciples, whom he had won to the Lord. Let's start with verse 3. I thank God, chapter 1 of 2 Timothy, in verse 3. I thank God, whom I serve with a pure conscience, as my forefathers did, as without ceasing I remember you in my prayers, night and day, greatly desiring to see you, being mindful of your tears, that I may be filled with joy when I call to remembrance the genuine faith that is in you. And I think the other term, what was the word? It's unfeigned faith, right, in the King James. This is the New King James I have here. The unfeigned or the genuine faith that is in you, which dwelt first in your grandmother Lois and in your mother Eunice, and I'm persuaded it's in you also. Now, one of the great, I was going to say tasks, but one of the great honors we have as parents is to instill faith in our children, faith in ourselves, as mothers interact with their children, that they trust us, trust you, right? But also instill the faith of the Lord, faith in the Lord Jesus Christ in the children. And here it didn't just go back to Timothy's mother, it went back to his grandmother, right? Your grandmother, Lois, and your mother, Eunice, and I'm persuaded is in you also. Boy, talk about a heritage. We had Heritage Day a few weeks ago, and that took a lot of work, a lot of people involved in that. And a lot of you volunteered pictures and things. How many pictures do we have, Tom? 600? Huh? 600 pictures, you know. And a lot of people contributed pictures from the past of the heritage we have here at the chapel. And there was many parents, many mothers and grandmothers in that picture, in that program of pictures, you know. But here Paul is reminding Timothy of his grandmother's faith. And that faith was passed down to her daughter, and Eunice, and then that faith was passed down to Timothy himself. And then, of course, Timothy going to many different places for Paul and raising up elders and deacons in different assemblies and reinforcing the work that Paul had established. So you never know how with that little extra time of reading a Bible story or praying with your child, mom, or grandchild, you never know how far that's going to go an investment. You know, time with children is an investment. And mothers, dads are away a lot. And mothers have the most time to make that investment. And it's a privilege. You know, it's a job sometimes, but it's a privilege to make that investment in your children. And some may get away from the Lord, you know, later on in life. Some may not. You know, some may make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And it grieves us sometimes. But the investment's there. And the Lord says that his word will not return unto him void, but it'll establish the purpose for which it was sent. And investments are good things. Good investments in the Lord's time, Lord's work, are good things. There was another mother. Let's take a look at Matthew 15. Matthew 15. This is a mother that intercepted the Lord. And he was up on the west coast, the northwest coast of Israel, up around Tyre and Sidon, and ministering to the towns up there. And in verse 21, this is probably a familiar passage to some of us, verse 21, Jesus went out from there and departed to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And Tyre and Sidon are up, way up on the northwest coast up here above the Sea of Galilee, probably about 50 miles over the hills and over down on the coast, right on the coast of the Mediterranean. Beautiful area, I would think. I haven't been there. And behold, a woman of Canaan came from that region and cried out to him, saying, "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed." But he answered her not a word. And his disciples came and urged him, saying, Send her away, for she's crying out after us. But he answered and said, I was not sent, except for the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And she came and worshipped him, saying, Lord, help me. But he answered and said, It's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. In the New King James, it says little dogs, puppies, you know. And she said, Yea, Lord, yet the little dogs eat the crumbs which fall from the master's table. And Jesus answered and said to her, O woman, great is thy faith. Let it be to you as your desire. And her daughter was healed from that very hour. And I was thinking how mothers, you know, are women of faith, need to be women of faith, Christian mothers. And that faith, as we read about in Lois and Eunice, that faith was that investment passed on. But here's a woman that was a Gentile. She wasn't a Jewish lady. She was a Gentile lady from up around Syria and Phoenicia. Phoenicia is the next country up along the coast there, north of Israel. And Jesus wasn't going to reach out to her, but she persisted. And her faith was honored by the Lord. Ladies, mothers, we must be women of faith, right? Women of faith. This isn't the only time that an act of faith paid off in this area. Let's go back to the Old Testament. Same area, 1 Kings 7. Pardon me, 1 Kings 17. 1 Kings 17. Old Testament. I'm in 2 Kings. Excuse me a moment. I was wondering why that passage didn't look familiar. 1 Kings 17. And there's the word of the Lord came to Elijah, saying, Arise, go to Zarephath, which belongs to Sidon. Now, Zarephath is a town on the coast, halfway between Tyre and Sidon, right up where the Lord was hundreds of years later, probably 1,000 or so years later. And Elijah, the prophet, was called to go to that area, right on the coast between Tyre and Sidon, and dwell there. And I've commanded a widow to provide for you. So he arose and went to Zarephath. When he came to the gate of the city, a widow was there gathering sticks. And he called to her and said, Please, bring me a little water in a cup that I may drink. And as she was going to get it, he called to her and said, Please bring me a morsel of bread in your hand. So she said, As the Lord your God lives, I don't have bread. I do not have bread, only a little handful of flour in a bin and a little oil in a jar. And look, I'm gathering a couple of sticks that I can go in and prepare it for myself and my son that we may eat it and die. Things were tough. Things were tough. It hadn't rained for a long time in Israel because Elijah had prayed, right? And things were tough. And they were out of food. And all she had was just a little bit of oil and a little bit of meal and a little bit of flour. And she was going to fix a little something, and then that was it. And after that, they'd starve to death. And he said, Don't fear. Verse 13, Go and do as you've said, but make me a small cake from it first and bring it to me. And afterward, make some for yourself and your son. For thus says the Lord God of Israel, The bin of flour shall not be used up, nor shall the jar of oil run dry, until the Lord sends rain on the earth. So she went away and did according to the word of Elijah, and she and her household ate for many days. The bin of flour was not used up, nor did the jar of oil run dry, according to the word of the Lord which he spoke by Elijah. Isn't that interesting? You know, and the thing was, he told her to get something for him first. You know, and it, so she had to make a choice. You know? Mothers make a lot of choices when they're raising children. Well, my mother had to make a lot of choices with me, and Carl and Bob too. But we'll just talk about me. But you know, mothers have to make a lot of choices, and some of them they make ahead of time and planning. You know, meals and responsibilities. You know, other decisions have to be made at the moment when a child comes in with you know, an injury, or a child comes in with the end of the world is coming. You know, as far as he's concerned or she is concerned, but. Mothers and dads know, and the kids, it's probably a small thing to them, but it's a big thing to the child, you know, and how we interact with our children, you know, is important. So she has a decision to make. Do I make this some bread out of this last little bit for this prophet or this man? I don't even know if he, I guess he did it. He must have identified himself as a prophet. But do I do that first, or do I take some for myself and my son first, just to make sure we have something, and then I'll give something to him. You know, but she decided to give it to him, as he said. And the Lord honored that by fulfilling what the Lord had said, that the oil will not fail and the flour will not fail. So we need to be women of faith. There's another one that talks about a woman of faith, too. Let's see. Luke chapter 7. Luke chapter 7. It wasn't a lady of faith, but a lady of sorrow. Luke chapter 7. And this one, and a lot of times we were talking Thursday night, our brother Charlie Tempest, we didn't get it taped. I wish I would have had it taped. We didn't get it taped. But our brother Charlie Tempest spoke from St. Catharines. He's from St. Catharines. He spoke here. But and he spoke on sorrow and on testing. And it's an excellent message that spoke to the fact that the Lord is able. And he shared some of the times in their life, some of the sorrows they had. They lost a daughter at a very young age and a baby. And the testing that his wife went through, and he and his wife went through, and found the Lord sufficient to meet that challenge. But it wasn't easy. He says, you know, you have all the why questions. You know, why? Why does this have to happen to me? You know? And Brother Charlie took us up to a couple of excellent passages in Psalms and another passage as well. But here's this lady she's lost a son. And this is in chapter 7 and verse, let's see, verse 11. It happened the day after that Jesus had healed this man, this boy who was a son of or a servant of a centurion in Capernaum. It says the day after he went to a city called Nain. Now Nain is right just south of Nazareth. It's up in about 1,600 feet above the Sea of Galilee, or above sea level, I should say, probably a couple of thousand feet above the Sea of Galilee. And right near Nazareth, very close to Nazareth, back his hometown, and near his hometown, about 6 miles away. And when he came to the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother. You know, it's tough to lose a son. You know, you hear many times, it's the son that's supposed to bury the parents, not the parents to bury the son, you know, your child. The only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the city was with her, and the Lord saw her, and he had compassion on her, and said to her, "Do not weep." And he came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still. And he said, "Young man, I say unto you, arise." And he who was dead sat up and began to speak, and he presented him to his mother. And fear came upon all, and they glorified God, saying, "A great prophet has risen up among us, and God has visited his people." And that report went all through Galilee, the surrounding region, about what had happened. And even the disciples of John heard about it and told John the Baptist. So it was a well-known thing. But this lady who had been in sorrow was given her son back to life. And we don't know if this lady was a lady of faith so much as the Lord just having spontaneous compassion on her. He just said that he had compassion on her. And moms, he has compassion on you. Even without the implementation of faith here, perhaps, he had compassion on this lady. And some of you are struggling today. You know, we've got several we announced that are ill and are seriously ill, and a lot of troubled hearts in the audience today about those especially. But God is a God of compassion, and in our frustration and in our stress, anxiety, allow Him to minister to you. Let's go back to 2 Kings this time. 2 Kings 4. Not too far from Nain is a town called Shunem. And in 2 Kings 4, just probably within 5 miles of where Jesus raised up this boy to life, there's a town by the name of Shunem that Elisha, in 2 Kings, Elisha was familiar with. And he traveled a lot through that region, up in the western Galilee, in that region. And it says in chapter 4, it says that it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman. And in chapter 4 and verse 8, And she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was as often as he went by, he turned in there to eat some food. She said to her husband, look, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. This even fits in with another passage I'm going to give you later that I didn't even catch the connection here. But here's a lady that, a woman, a mother, well, she's not a mother yet, is she? No. But she's a lady that loves the Lord, loves God. And she said, look, this guy is a prophet. This is a man of God. Why don't we make a special place in our home and provide a place for him to dwell, says to her husband. You know, hospitality is an excellent thing for men and women to have, but moms especially are hospitable. Many of you deal with perhaps your neighbors and sharing things with the kids in the neighborhood, or perhaps it's your ministry more is with teens or with older people from the assembly or from the neighborhood. But hospitality is something that's encouraged in the New Testament, especially with elders and deacons and their wives. But hospitality is a sign of our loving our neighbors as ourselves, right? And this lady was hospitable. And it happened one day that he came there, it says in verse 11, and he turned into the upper room and lay down there, and he said to Gehazi, call this Shunammite woman. When he had called her, she stood before him, and he said to him, say now to her, look, you've been concerned with us for all this care. What can I do for you? You want me to speak on your behalf to the king? Or to the commander of the army? And she said, I dwell with my own people. You know, she's a humble person. Ladies, that's a good sign too, isn't it? A good attribute for us to have is humility. I just dwell, you know, kings? No. You know, the commander of the army? No. I dwell with my own people. They're up in the hills, you know, a couple thousand feet above Galilee, and it's a beautiful region up there. The Mount Gerizim is not too far from there. They could look out and they could see Mount Gerizim from that area. And beautiful area. And so I'm satisfied where I am. And it's good to be satisfied where you are. Not wanting to be a first lady or something like that. Well, we won't go there. But anyway, not wanting to be someone that has a lot of title and stuff. I mean, that's not evil necessarily, but it's good to be content. And she said, I dwell among my own people. And so he said, well, what then can be done for her? Gehazi said, actually, she has no son, and her husband is old. So he called her. So he said, call her. And when he called her, she stood in the doorway, and he said, about this time next year, you'll embrace a son. Oh, no, my Lord, man of God, don't lie to your maidservant. So that was something she had wanted. You know, she maybe hadn't expressed it, but she had wanted it, because she said, now, don't let this be a lie. Don't let this be a fabrication. Don't put me on. You know, she wanted that. And the woman conceived and bore a son when the appointed time had come of which Elisha had told her. But as the story goes, the child grew. And one day, while the child was out in the heat of the day, and in verse 19, he said to his father, my head, my head. So he said to his servant, carry him to his mother. And when he had taken and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. So this one that the man of God had promised was taken from her. And now there's more. We talk about decisions. What are you going to do? You know, Friday night, we had our camp corporation meeting down at camp. And Larry Thompson shared about this boy, the Cain boy that we talked about last week, Tyler, who had flipped over the four-wheeler. I mean, this kid's only about, he ain't tall. I mean, he's a seven-year-old, I think, but he's a tall seven-year-old. He's probably got ADHD, and he's pretty sly as a fox, and he had found out how to start that four-wheeler, and he had taken it out without permission. And the thing flipped over on him a couple hundred yards, about 400 yards from his dad. His dad was doing something else, and he looked up and he heard the thing go. He couldn't catch him, and he was unconscious. He got him to the hospital, and Jamestown flew him up here by Mercy Flight, or whatever, Star Flight, the one from Jamestown. And Larry was with the family all day Saturday. So Sunday morning, Larry's trying to decide, do I go home or do I stay with him? So he stayed in the apartment overnight, as we offered. And he decided to go home and worship with his family down at the church they fellowship with down in the Southern Tier. Because he had been reading a couple of passages, and one of them was one of them was the story of David when he had sinned with Bathsheba, and Bathsheba conceived, and she had the son, But then the boy took sick. And the boy, and David was grieving, and he was praying, and he was fasting, and he was before the Lord in prayer. And but then the son died. And he could tell by the demeanor of his servants that something had gone wrong, and the son had died. And he said, "Is the child dead?" And they said, "Yes." And David, it says in the scriptures, David got up and worshipped. I think it's 2 Samuel. It says David got up and worshipped. And then, you know, now let's start. You know, we all don't often think of if we have a loss of someone, and I guess that was Larry's point. We don't often think in our terms of loss, in our terms of sorrow, of worshiping. Could we do that? That was Larry's question to us. Could we do that? Then he talked about Job, where Job had heard all the loss of all his livestock and the loss of the buildings, and all his children had died. And it says immediately, Job, in chapter 1, I think in verse 20, Job got up and worshipped. And Larry just brought that before us, and it was very interesting. I don't know, moms, if you could do that. I don't know if I could do that or did that. But those are the exact words that are used in two instances of Scripture right in times of tragedy. So here's this lady, and her son dies. And she went up, in verse 21, she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, shut the bed door on him, and went out. And she called to her husband, "Prepare me one of the young men, and send one of the young men, and get one of the donkeys, that I may run to the man of God and come back." And she didn't even tell the husband that he had died, the boy had died. She went to the man of God, to make it short. She went to the man of God, and his question was, "Is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child?" And she said, "It is well." And then she came and put her hands on his feet, and she clung to him by the feet. In verse 27, the man of God said, "Let her alone, for her soul is in deep distress, and the Lord has hidden it from me." And she said, "Did I ask of you, son of the Lord? Did I say, don't deceive me? Did not I say, don't deceive me?" And then he realized what had happened. So Elisha went and laid on the boy, and the boy revived, and the boy was brought back to life. But there's another woman of faith. She had to make a tough decision. But she didn't forsake what she knew about Elisha. And she went to Elisha because she knew he was a man of God. And that in our activities, ladies, your activities too. First decision, go to God. Go to God. Pray about it. You might have to be in tune to worship, but go to God and pray about it and beseech him. And verse 36, he called Gehazi and said, "Call the Shunammite woman." So he called to her, and when she came in to him, he said, "Pick up your son." And she went in and fell at his feet and bowed to the ground, picked up her son, and went out. Verse 37. So two different instances, one on the coast of Tyre and Sidon, and one right near Nazareth, not far from where Nazareth either was or would be built. Old Testament, New Testament, same thing. There were healings there that were taking place in that particular area. The other one, which was in the same area, was the lady in I think it's in the same passage here, in chapter 4, verse 1. Let's go up to the top of the chapter. We don't know if this was in the same area or not. I don't know where this was. I skipped to the second one because I knew it was right in the same areas where Jesus had raised up that one boy from the dead. But a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets, verse 1 of chapter 4, cried out to Elisha, saying, "Your servant, my husband, is dead, and you know that your servant feared the Lord, and a creditor is coming to take my two sons to be his slaves." So Elisha said to her, "What shall I do for you? Tell me, what do you have in the house?" And she said, "Your maidservant has nothing in the house but a jar of oil." And he said, "Go, borrow vessels from everywhere, from all your neighbors, empty vessels. Don't gather just a few. Do not gather just a few." There's a key phrase. Don't gather just a few. "And when you have come in, you shall shut the door behind you and your sons, and pour it into all those vessels, and set aside the full ones." So she went from him and shut the door behind her and her sons, who had brought vessels to her, and she poured it out. So she had gone home, told her sons, "Go next door, see if you can borrow some pitchers, some buckets." I don't know, who knows what she bought, what she got. But go borrow some vessels. And they went through the neighborhood, through the tents surrounding them. I was going to say high rises, you know, but I don't think they had those. But through the tents surrounding them, you know, and they started asking people for pitchers or for bowls or for something you could put liquids in. It was kind of an odd request. I don't know what the neighbors thought. But here the two boys, went out and did her bidding. And I mention that because those decisions that mothers make affect their children. So the boys come in, mom shuts the door, and she takes out, you can picture Dave Stifler doing this, right? We've seen him do this many times, you know, where he takes that pitcher and he starts pouring it into a container, and it fills it up. And then he sets that one aside, and he keeps talking, you know, and he pours it into another one. And, you know, these kids, what did these two kids think of, I wonder? These two boys, we don't know how old they were. We don't know whether they were little kids or whether they were teenagers or what. So I suspect they were probably, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old. Who knows? That's a guess. But it says in verse 5, she went from him, shut the door behind her. You know, just like the lady we read about before, make me a morsel first. And she made him a morsel first. Shut the door behind her, because Elisha said, shut the door behind you. And her and her sons, who brought their vessels to her, and she poured it out. You just see these kids picking these pitchers off of the table, or maybe off of the floor, you know, and mom's pouring this pitcher into it. And they know the size of the pitcher, right? I mean, it's right in front of them. And she fills up, maybe the one they grabbed was bigger than the original, you know, who knows? And they filled it up, set it over on its side. Pick up another one, mom's still pouring. Mom's a woman of faith. Mom's a woman of obedience. And those kids could never forget that. How could you forget that? To see pitchers or bowls of oil all over the place when you only had this one container to start with. You know, we've seen this illustration many times, but I've never thought of it from the son's perspective till I prepared for today, you know. Because what we do as parents, what you do, ladies, as mothers, you know, is observed by your kids. You know that. You know, it's observed by the kids, and these kids must have been really excited by the time we got down to the 10th or 12th bowl. You know, came to pass when the vessels were full, she said to her son, "Bring me another vessel." And he said to her, "There isn't another vessel." So the oil ceased. The oil ceased. You know, it didn't start overflowing the pitcher she was holding. You know, it didn't start bubbling up and overflowing. It ceased because he said, "Don't bring a few vessels. Bring many vessels," because the need was great. The need was great, and the blessing was great, right? The need was great and the blessing was great because the woman was obedient. And I'll guarantee those two kids never forgot that lesson when they started having children of their own. If they lived that long to have children. If they saw events in their life knowing that I can make a choice whether I want to do it God's way or do it my way, and they saw God's way, and they remembered what mom did back in that, just in that house with all the doors closed, nobody could come in and see it except those two, and they saw their obedience. So obedience to the Lord, ladies, is precious because it goes way far beyond your decision. It goes way far beyond your lifetime. If you have children, or if you work with others around you, not just your children, could be, you know, people in your own family, brothers and sisters, by your example. Many times in a family, not all the family are believers, but our decisions, if our decisions are made and we're consistent, why it's a ministry. It's a ministry, and if there's no hypocrisy there. She came and told the man of God, he said, "Okay, go and sell the oil, and pay your debt. And you and your kids live on the rest. You and your sons live on the rest." So there wasn't just enough to pay the debt. There was enough for them to live on. So they didn't just get a few vessels. They got a number of vessels. Because you only fit so many vessels in our tent, you know, or a house. But there was enough for them to sell, pay off the debt to the creditor. Creditor was taken care of. And there was enough to live on until the land was replenished itself and they could afford to get more food. A great lesson in obedience, and a great lesson in being a model, being a role model to the kids. And speaking of role models and things, let's look at, we were talking about hospitality a little bit too. Let's look at, for our last path, oh boy, I didn't write the reference down here. Let's see if I got my other paper here. Book of Acts 12:12, the last one. Book of Acts. Kind of one we don't hear spoken on very much, because we're usually hearing it spoken on about some another part of the message. But in Acts chapter 12, Herod had killed James already, the brother of John, with a sword. And he tried to seize Peter. He captured Peter. And Peter is in jail. Now that's a strange thing to talk about on Mother's Day, Jim. What are you talking about that for? But let's look at chapter 12 of Acts and verse 5. Peter was therefore kept in prison, but constant prayer was offered to God for him by the church. We need to be people of prayer. Not just faith and obedience, but people of communication. We hear that Christianity is not a religion, it's a relationship. And relationship goes two ways, right? Relationship goes two ways. And when you break that relationship by either not reading or else not talking to the Lord, you know, it's a strained relationship. And that's not good. When Herod was about to bring Peter out, that night, Peter was sleeping, bound with... Imagine being in prison, knowing you might be beheaded, and he's sleeping. So he was a man of faith. Bound with two chains between two soldiers, and the guards before the prison were keeping the prison. Now an angel of the Lord stood by him, and a light shone in the prison, and he struck Peter on the side and raised him up, saying, "Arise, quickly." And his chains fell off his hands. And the angel said to him, "Gird yourself and tie on your sandals." And he did. And he said to him, "Put on your garment and follow me." So he went out, followed him, and didn't know where that which was being done by the angel was real, but he thought it was a vision. And when they were past the first and second guard posts, they came to the iron gate that leads to the city, which opened to them of its own accord. And they went out and went down one street, and immediately the angel departed from them. And when Peter had come to himself, he said, "Now I know for certain that the Lord has sent his angel." He was out of the prison, he was down a street, going to another street, before he realized it wasn't a vision. Hey, this is really real, you know, I'm really out, you know. It really took a while for him to figure that out. And he said, "He sent his angel, and has delivered me from the hand of Herod and from all the expectation of the Jewish people." So when he had considered this, he came to the house of Mary, the mother of John, whose surname was Mark, where many were gathered together praying. And there's the reference to that mother. We never heard of her before. But it's her name is Mary, John Mark's mother. We've heard of John Mark before in the scriptures, but I think this is the only time it refers to his mother. So his mother apparently was right. I think this is still in Jerusalem, if I remember right. I believe it is. And so in Jerusalem, John Mark's mother abode. Okay, she lived there. And the point, of course, here is again hospitality. The point is opening your home to let believers come in and fellowship. And here was a mother that, even though John Mark had been probably traveling with the Lord for some time, we don't know how long, but he's definitely was associated with the apostles here. And many from the group came to her home, so she must have had them there before. I remember Dave often mentioning that his dad and mom used to have you know, missionaries travel through. They'd come and stay at the house. And he always had an opportunity to hear stories of mission fields and meet people that came from way far away, you know, and hear stories about that. He's mentioned that when he's given his testimony. And being hospitable, having other people in, is a good event for your kids, for your family, for your husband. Because there's an opportunity where you can have some fellowship one with another. We sometimes have, when I ask speakers to come in, I sometimes have them over to the house. You know, you have a little chance to talk to them on a little bit different level than you hear from the platform, you know, and you have a good time of just comfortable interaction and getting into some good conversations. So that's a ministry. I don't know whether you've taken part of that, ladies, or not, but that's a good ministry to open your homes up to, is to entertain speakers, entertain the young people's group, entertain even just a group of people from here to have a time of prayer, to have a time of fellowship and studying the Word. You know, home Bibles, the early New Testament church met in homes. You know, we have a building here, but Christians, the church comes to the building, right? The church comes to the building for edification, but the evangelism in most cases happens in homes, or happens on the street, or happens at work or wherever. You know, Frank has given us instances many times of people at work during lunch hours that talk to him. You know? And so evangelism takes place mostly outside the church. You know, sure, we're here to be edified. So your home, ladies, is a good spot to invite other women in. I have home Bible studies, get to know them, and just to see, have them experience what a godly home is like, you know, and what your testimony at home. You know. So there's just a few things to look at. I thought I'd give today and share today as I was reading the last couple of weeks. I also noticed other instances of Eve's mother in the Old Testament. A lot of the times in the Kings and the Chronicles, when I talked about the kings, it says whose mother was, you know. The king might be good or the king might be evil, but it always talks about the mother, you know, and you're your mother's child, I guess, no matter how old you are, right? And when Solomon's brother tried to take the throne when David was elderly, you know, Nathan came in to Bathsheba and said, Bathsheba, Adonijah, I think, is already celebrating. He's killed some lambs and stuff, and he's celebrating with some of his friends, and he thinks he's going to be king. But David told Bathsheba that Solomon was going to be king, and Bathsheba was strong enough to go in and intercede for her son to her husband. So many different examples of women in the Old Testament and in the New Testament that speak to us of faith, that speak to us of obedience, and to speak to us of hospitality. So mothers, I'd like to encourage you to keep on keeping on, because you've got a great ministry and a great opportunity to show forth the love of the Lord Jesus Christ. And I know some of you are having troubled times, some of you are not so troubled, but hang in there, because the Lord will bless, and the Lord will honor you. And we're grateful for your testimony. Well, let's just have a word of prayer.